This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Sudan's army appeared to gain the upper hand Sunday in a bloody power struggle with rival paramilitary forces after blasting its bases with airstrikes. At least 59 civilians were killed, including three UN workers. VOA's Steve Koresh tells us more.
The fighting erupted on Saturday between army units loyal to General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, head of Sudan's Transitional Governing Sovereign Council, and the paramilitary Rapid Support Force, or RSF, led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who is deputy head of the council. Efforts by neighbors and regional bodies to end the violence intensified on Sunday. That included an offer by Egypt and South Sudan to mediate between the fighting parties. Steve Karish, VOA News.
Suspected militants killed dozens in Burkina Faso. VOA's Joe Ramsey reports.
At least 32 defense volunteers and 10 soldiers have died in suspected attacks in insurgency-hit northern Burkina Faso, officials said on Sunday. A detachment of soldiers and the civilian volunteers was the target of an attack by unidentified armed men on Saturday, the local governor said. The army said the death toll was 40, 8 soldiers and 32 defense volunteers. Also claiming at least 50 quote-unquote terrorists were neutralized in a counterattack, including a number killed in airstrikes. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Leaders and diplomats from Europe have worn a path to Beijing since Chinese leader Xi Jinping was anointed president for a third time. The European Union wants Xi to persuade President Vladimir Putin to end Russia's costly war in Ukraine, and also concerned about a military escalation around Taiwan. China launched war games there after French President Emmanuel Macron visited. This is VOA News. A top Ukrainian official says more than 100 Ukrainian prisoners of war have been released in a major Easter exchange with Russia. Orthodox Ukrainians are marking the holiday for a second time since Moscow unleashed its full-scale war more than a year ago. Celebrations were subdued Sunday because of security risk, with a curfew barring the faithful from customary all-night services. But Ukrainian authorities and ordinary people shared messages of hope. Some worshippers in central Kyiv nevertheless admitted that the continuing restrictions were very hard on morale. Others stressed that they were praying for Ukrainian troops. The top Republican on the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee says the military needs to do a better job of securing confidential information in the wake of sensitive documents being leaked out by a 21-year-old Air National Guardsman.
System failed.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who's in the Middle East, tells ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos he's hearing foreign dignitaries complain about the release of damaging and embarrassing information.
I can promise you it's been very damaging. There's information about Mossad supposedly helping the protesters. There's information about the air defense capability of Ukraine, and everybody in the region's really worried.
He says, why would anyone share secrets with the U.S. if a low-level military member can leak it out? This weekend in Asia, Secretary of State Antony Blinken tried to downplay the fallout.
It's not affected our cooperation. I just haven't seen that.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
The Israeli government says it will not scrap judicial overhaul plans despite ongoing mass protest. AP correspondent Mimi Montgomery reporting.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu may have paused reform plans for now, but protesters are still turning up in numbers. Weekly protest organizers say they will put pressure until the plans are completely thrown out. Appearing on NBC's Meet the Press and asked about public anger, Netanyahu insists judiciary reform is needed.
I look for a broad consensus on the judiciary. Every democracy, including your own, has continuous tension between the judiciary and the executive or the legislative.
Currently on trial on corruption charges, the plan could give Netanyahu and his government allies final say in appointing judges and see parliament gain authority to overturn the Supreme Court. I'm Mimi Montgomery.
Pope Francis has publicly defended St. John Paul II, slamming as offensive and baseless what he called recent insinuations about the late pontiff. In remarks to the public in St. Peter's Square Sunday, Francis said he was interpreting the feelings of the faithful worldwide by expressing gratitude to the Polish pontiff's memory. Days earlier, the Vatican had described as slanderous an audio tape. I'm Tom McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Today's Monday, April 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Junaid Rafoe in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, China expresses neutrality in the Russia-Ukraine conflict amid Western criticism.
Qin said China wants to work for peace between Russia and Ukraine and surprised many by saying that Beijing would not supply weapons to either side.
The African Union holds emergency session as Sudan's military rivals face off in power struggle.
It was a sleepless night for many Sudanese families and residents of the capital Khartoum and other towns across the country. Heavy gunfire could be heard downtown around Sudan's military headquarters.
And NATO allies Greece and Turkey close ranks to tap lucrative energy projects. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The African Union's Peace and Security Council convened at the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa in an emergency session on Sunday to discuss political and security developments in Sudan. The Council said it strongly rejected any external interference that could complicate the situation in Sudan. This as doctors in Sudan say at least 56 people are confirmed dead and nearly 600 others injured since clashes between the military and a paramilitary force erupted Saturday. Medics have appealed for humanitarian passage for those injured in the violence. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
It was a sleepless night for many Sudanese families and residents of the capital Khartoum and other towns across the country. Heavy gunfire could be heard downtown around Sudan's military headquarters and the presidential palace. Both the military and the Rapid Support Forces group have claimed control of these strategic locations. The Central Committee of the Sudan Doctors tweeted that 600 people sustained injuries and that some are in a critical condition. "We call for an immediate cessation of fighting," the tweet reads. It said the fighting claimed the lives of innocent and armed civilians and safe passage must be opened to evacuate the detainees, the stranded and the injured to be provided with medical assistance. Hundreds of people have been caught up in a downtown area since Saturday, including some 250 students at the St. Daniel Kamboni Catholic School in Khartoum. The head of the Sudanese Journalist Syndicate, Abdul Munem Abu Idris, told VOA via a messaging application that about 12 journalists, including four females, have been stranded in the Sudanese Kueti Business Center since Saturday morning. Abu Idris appealed to the warring parties to create a safe corridor for them to go to their families.
"I'm calling for the two parties to create a safe passage for all the civilians inside the confrontations area, and especially the journalists who are being stuck from yesterday."
The Sudanese Kueti Business Center is located east of the presidential palace along the River Nile. It is a working office space for many media outlets. Abu Idris described the area as a serious confrontation zone between the military and the RSF. He says those journalists and other civilians would be in need of basic items to survive.
"They don't have food, they are not in a safe area. Because they are inside the area of the exchange affairs, and we are calling also for the Red Crescent to intervene to rescue the civilian and those journalists."
The UN Security Council called on the warring parties to stop fighting and engage in a dialogue to reach an amicable solution. Reports say recent tensions between the army and the RSF stem from disagreements with how the RSF should be integrated into the army and who should oversee that process. It is part of an effort to restore the country to civilian rule and end the political crisis sparked by a military coup in October 2021. The African Union's Peace and Security Council held an extraordinary meeting Sunday in Nairobi to discuss the situation in Sudan. The meeting also appealed to the Sudanese military and RSF leaders to de-escalate confrontation and restore stability. Arab League countries also seriously condemned the fighting in Sudan, calling for calm. Egypt and South Sudan announced in a joint statement their intention to mediate between Sudan's warring parties. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
Thank you, Michael. And China has responded to Western criticism by saying it will remain neutral in the Russia-Ukraine war and not sell weapons to either side. The remarks by Chinese Foreign Minister Qin Gang came during a tense press conference with visiting German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Sidney Sain reports.
Qin said China wants to work for peace between Russia and Ukraine and surprised many by saying that Beijing would not supply weapons to either side. Baerbock had this frank reaction.
It is good that China has signaled its commitment to a solution, but I have to say, frankly, that I wonder why the Chinese position so far does not include a call on the aggressor Russia to stop the war.
Baerbock's visit to Beijing comes on the heels of one last weekend by French President Emmanuel Macron. Macron triggered a backlash by remarking that Europe should not get caught in the middle of a conflict between the United States and China over Taiwan. Tensions in the region have escalated even higher since China conducted massive military drills sealing off Taiwan. Taiwan, in return, conducted a war disaster drill to practice responding to a Chinese attack. China's foreign minister called on Germany and others to condemn Taiwan.
Taiwan independent separatist forces in the island, with the support and influence of some overseas forces, are engaged in Taiwan independent separatist activities. This is the root cause for the tense situation in the Taiwan Strait today. If everyone hopes for stability in the Taiwan Strait and peace and tranquility in the region, they must take a clear stance against Taiwan independence and foreign interference.
Baerbock said a military escalation in the crucial Taiwan Strait would be a disastrous scenario for global trade and for export-dependent Germany. Some experts say it is possible Macron negotiated with China to forego weapons deliveries to Russia in exchange for France appearing to take China's side on Taiwan, and that it remains to be seen whether Beijing will honor its word on arms to Moscow. Carissa Nietzsche is with the Center for New American Security. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I will be curious to see if this is a credible commitment and whether China sticks by these words. I do also think, you know, if this was a trade or there was any kind of horse trading between Macron and Beijing, I will be curious whether European and transatlantic unity and the perception of that, you know, fracturing in the wake of this visit was worth that commitment.
But another expert told VOA that although Macron's timing was poor, he may have a valid message for policymakers in Washington and Brussels that Europe is already anxious with the Russian invasion of Ukraine happening so close to home. Sibel Akhtay is a senior fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
When you dig deeper, that's also a signal for the United States and for NATO allies that says, listen, this is probably coming. This is on our doorstep, this crisis with China over Taiwan. But we want to ensure that the United States does not pivot its attention entirely and kind of withdraws or diverts resources away from Europe and away from this war that we're facing with Russia.
China announced that it will send Defense Minister Li Shangfu to Russia next week for a four-day visit at the invitation of his Russian counterpart, Sergei Shoigu. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Nationalist governments in Poland and Hungary have banned imports of Ukrainian grain and other products to protect their farmers. The EU has condemned the member states' unilateral moves, and Lisa Fielder of Reuters has more.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year blocked some Black Sea ports, leaving large quantities of Ukrainian grain, which is cheaper than that produced in the European Union, in central European states due to logistical bottlenecks. That knocked prices and sales for local farmers, angering Poland's ruling Law and Justice Party, which has a big rural support base, in an election year. The Polish ban, which came into effect on Saturday evening, will also apply to the transit of these products through the country, the Development and Technology Minister said on Sunday. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's government followed suit, but did not say when its ban would come into effect. Kyiv said the Polish ban contradicted bilateral agreements and called for talks to settle the issue. Ukraine exports most of its agricultural goods, especially grain, via its Black Sea ports, which were unblocked in July under an agreement between Ukraine, Turkey, Russia and the United Nations.
That's Lucy Field of Reuters. NATO allies Greece and Turkey came to the brink of war just a few years ago over competing energy rights in the Aegean and Eastern Mediterranean seas. Now, as both sides near key national elections, the government in Athens is extending an olive branch, saying it is open to Turkey joining on lucrative energy projects. Anthi Karasava reports on a remarkable shift in relations between the age-old foes after devastating earthquakes in Turkey brought the two sides closer.
In a television interview with Greece's national broadcaster, Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias said it was imperative for Athens and Ankara to capitalize on their thawed relations. After national elections are held in both countries next month, both sides can sit down and talk seriously. But to do so, Dendias said, there must be an agreed framework of discussion that is more likely to be worked out now, the Greek foreign minister said, saying it would be a shame to squander such an opportunity given the excellent relations currently between the two countries. Such remarks would have been unthinkable even months ago when the two sides were hurling war threats and engaging in dangerous war games in the Aegean Sea over competing energy rights to vast oil and gas deposits in the eastern Mediterranean. But after a set of devastating earthquakes struck Turkey earlier this year, and Greece rushed to the support of its age-old foe, also prodding its European Union allies to provide urgent financial assistance to the government in Ankara, relations have taken a remarkable shift. Dendias said daily and dangerous overflights in the Aegean by Turkish warplanes have ceased entirely. Communication between the two sides has resumed, and even the prospect of cooperation regarding once contentious energy projects is now being welcomed by Athens. Among them, the so-called East Mediterranean Gas Forum, that includes regional states like Israel, Egypt, and Jordan. Greece now says it is open to also inviting Turkey. Any participation by any other country would require approval from the other members, but it would mark a very important move, as Dendias put it. Other prospect of cooperation includes a nearly 4 billion euro grid connector streaming across the Mediterranean, which Greece and Egypt want to build in coming years, tapping into lucrative reserves that are currently being explored. Turkey has disputed access to those areas, which Greece claims exclusively as its own in the eastern Mediterranean, sparking tension and naval standoffs between the two sides in recent years. Whether the solid climate of affairs between Greece and Turkey will be sustained for talks to be held remains uncertain. In recent days, and at an election rally in Turkey, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan renewed territorial claims against Greece. So too have other leading officials. But Dendias insists that should not spoil the climate of trust building up between the two NATO allies. It's clear the rhetoric is aimed at Erdogan's domestic audience. And it is also clear, Dendias said, the upcoming elections will not be a walk in the park for Erdogan, and that Turkey's position on long-standing issues with Greece will not change overnight. Dendias said 63 attempts to restart constructive dialogue between Greece and Turkey have failed. But there is hope that the 64th will succeed after May elections in both Greece and Turkey. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
In other news, energy and environment ministers of the group of seven wealthy nations have vowed to work to hasten the shift towards cleaner, renewable energy was set no timetable for phasing out coal-fired power plants. The G7 officials issued a communique on Sunday, laying out their commitment after 2 days of talks in the northern Japanese city of Sapporo. The 36-page document was prepared in advance of a G7 summit to be held in Hiroshima in May. Japan won endorsements from fellow G7 countries for its own national strategy emphasizing so-called clean coal, hydrogen and nuclear energy to help ensure its energy security. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. UN agencies warn hundreds of thousands of refugees in Chad are facing severe cuts in food rations because international donors are not responding to urgent pleas for financial support. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Chad is surrounded by countries in crises. This landlocked, impoverished country is host to nearly 600,000 refugees from Sudan, Niger, Cameroon, and Central African Republic, one of the biggest caseloads of refugees in Africa. The World Food Programme aims to assist 4 million people in 2023. They include more than 2.2 million Chadians facing acute hunger, as well as returnees, internally displaced people, and refugees. WFP Country Director in Chad, Pierre Honorat, says WFP urgently needs $142.7 million to provide life-saving food aid for all crisis-affected communities, including refugees, over the next 6 months. He notes lack of money already has forced WFP to reduce rations for refugees in recent months.
90% of our refugees in 2022 did not receive even 6 months of assistance. And those months of assistance were with half ration. 2023 is another very difficult year, whereby we have absolutely no funding from May onwards for the refugees and the displaced people. It's really catastrophic.
Honorat says chronic underfunding has forced WFP to cut the number of beneficiaries from 600,000 refugees to 270,300 in April. And he warns all food assistance to refugees will come to an end in May if the needed funds are not received immediately.
So you can imagine the consequences, like unacceptable malnutrition rates, violence and protection issues in the camps, and the rising tensions with the host population and other unacceptable life coping mechanisms.
Honorat warns conditions for both refugee and host communities will get considerably worse during the so-called lean or hunger season between June and August. This is the period of the year when food stocks are at their lowest and hunger reaches new heights. Latest UN assessment missions in refugee camps and hosting areas have found a worrying deterioration of refugees' nutrition and food security. WFP reports 42% of children suffer from chronic malnutrition, and the number of malnourished children needing specialized treatment has risen by 65% in camps in the east of the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency launched its Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer, or JUICE, spacecraft from its Guiana Space Center on Friday, April 14th. According to ESA's JUICE website, the spacecraft is slated to make comprehensive examinations of the solar system's largest planet, as well as its three largest ocean moons, Ganymede, Callisto, and Europa. JUICE, which will use gravity assist to propel it through space, is set to orbit the Jupiter system in July 2031. Since the gas giant planet was discovered by legendary astronomer Galileo Galilei in 1610, the spacecraft carries a commemorative plaque to honor his discoveries. As of now, the JUICE mission will end in September 2035, when the spacecraft will be intentionally crashed into Ganymede. But ESA could also elect to extend the mission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
How do you get international news? Radio, television, social media, or all of the above? Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp, leave a message, comments, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202 258 3076.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chino Rofo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States, in coordination with the United Kingdom, has imposed sanctions on individuals and companies supporting the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad through the illicit drug trade, in particular, the production and distribution of the dangerous amphetamine Captagon. The Captagon trade is estimated to be a $1 billion criminal enterprise. Syria has become a global leader in the production of highly addictive Captagon, much of which is trafficked through Lebanon, said Andrea Gacki, director of the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Financial Assets Control. Many of the individuals designated on March 28th, including under the CSAR Act, are either family members or close allies of Syrian President al-Assad. Two cousins, Samer Kamal al-Assad and Wasim Badi al-Assad, were sanctioned for their involvement in the production and distribution of Captagon and other drugs. Khalid Kadour is a Syrian businessman and close associate of Maher al-Assad, the brother of Bashar al-Assad, who was sanctioned by the United States for his leading role in the regime's escalation of violence against the Syrian people. Kadour is reportedly responsible for managing revenues generated by illicit activities, including the production and trafficking of Captagon. Also sanctioned was Imad Abu Zarik, a former Free Syrian Army commander, now leading a Syrian military intelligence-affiliated militia with an important role enabling drug production and smuggling in southern Syria. Two Lebanese nationals with close ties to Hezbollah, Noah Zaitar, a known arms dealer and drug smuggler, and Hassan Muhammad Daku, dubbed by the media the King of Captagon, were designated as well, as were two of Daku's companies. The new sanctions come at a time when several Arab countries have indicated a willingness to normalize relations with the Assad regime. During a recent UN Security Council briefing on the political and humanitarian situation in Syria, acting U.S. Deputy Representative to the UN, Jeffrey De Laurentiis, cautioned that Assad is still the brutal dictator whose regime repeatedly used chemical weapons against the Syrian people. His regime has conducted attacks on civilians and has detained, tortured, or murdered hundreds of thousands of people. Assad is also flooding the regime with Captagon, spreading addiction and criminality. As State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vidant Patel declared, the United States will continue to coordinate with our allies and partners to target traffickers of illicit drugs and those who provide support to the Syrian regime's vicious war.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.